Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 25, Blender. This show and the entire TWiT broadcast network is brought to you by donations from listeners like you. Thanks. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers open source, free Libre open source software. Everything from Linux to Python to Perl to Pavre. And this week, we're going to talk about the preeminent 3D rendering program out there. Randall Schwartz, how are you today?
I am doing great. I just got back from that Scientific American cruise, and we've got materials coming from that cruise in my podcast stream already.
Oh,
and
good.
That's just been great. And it's right on the heels of our last show with Pavre. I managed to scrape up the Blender guys.
I sense a trend here.
At least a short trend. I don't know if we're going to continue it for much longer, but I had an opportunity to drop an email immediately after that last show. In fact, I dropped an email to the Blender mailing list, and I got Campbell Barton and Brecht von Lommel, who are both on the development team and working heavily with Blender, to agree on short notice, very short notice, to talk with us today. So that's
Do you
very
use Blender? Are you a Blender Blenderizer?
I am a Blender poker. I poke a little bit at it to try to make it do what I want, and I'm not very good at this stuff yet. You know, this is the same thing. I even said it with Pavre last week, which is like I'm not, this isn't really my area. I mean, I use like Photoshop to cut and paste. That's fine. And I can make, like merged photos, but I can't really do what the Photoshop people really do. And the same thing's true with like Blender. I can kind of put something on the screen and I can kind of get my cameras in the right place and kind of get my lights in the right place. And I can tweak some of the materials, but that's really not my area. I mean, I'm a words guy.
Yeah, me neither. I took a look at Blender years ago, back when it was Blender.nl, and I think we talked about it a lot on the Screensavers, and we even had Blender guys come in and show it. But unlike Photoshop, which I felt like, well, I can kind of get this, I never felt like I could understand Blender or any 3D program. They just go right over my head.
Yep.
But if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have, Toy Story. We wouldn't have a lot of the great stuff, the 3D stuff, is both animated and still that we see nowadays. I mean, it really is a fast-growing area of computing.
Absolutely. Hey, just before we get into talking with these Blender guys today, a bit of unfinished business from last week. As we were wrapping up last week's show, last show on there, we were talking about Pavre, and I said, couldn't we make maybe a prism that would actually split light and turn it into multiple colors like a real prism would? And I seemed to think that would be too hard to do. And you said, no, I'm sure it does it. Well, I actually have been chatting with the Pavre guys since last time, and they, in fact, confirmed that, yes, it's not on by default, but you can make a prism and it will split the light up into 12 bands. It's not completely smooth, but it will break it into effectively a rainbow for you.
You're kidding.
Not kidding.
Really,
it's
neat.
Called chromatic dispersion in section 3.6.1 of the manual, and there's been actually a lot of discussion with the Pavre guys after last week's last show, because they really enjoyed the fact that they were able to chat online and chat with us. So
isn't that fun?
Just that's some unfinished business last week. I want to make sure we got it in before we start talking today's guys.
And that's why I love the open source community. I love the sense that everybody's in it together. Nobody's competing. We're just, everybody's having fun making great stuff that everybody can use. I mean,
Absolutely. Just a lot of fun. Yeah.
I just love it. So we're going to go to, I think it's Holland, right? Or is it Belgium? I don't know. We'll
Amsterdam.
Find out.
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
Right. In Amsterdam, did Kubla Khan a Staley? No, never mind.
No,
right.
That's not Amsterdam. Campbell Barton, and I have no idea if I'm saying this right. Maybe I'll let you say his name.
Brecht von Lommel? I guess it's close.
We should probably ask him. They are actually in the same locale where they are working on Blender right now. Let's bring them on. So thanks for joining us, guys. We really appreciate it. I've been touting Blender for ages. But didn't it kind of go away for a little bit?
Well, in 2002, it was away for a bit when the company that developed Blender went bankrupt. But after that, it stayed there pretty much.
So was it open source? It was always open source, though.
No, it wasn't.
So the company that was commercially making it stopped.
Yes, they went bankrupt, and then Tom did a campaign to open the source code.
And that happened, and they did.
Yeah, they raised I think 100,000 euros in a few months, and basically got bought the source code for a very small price because, well, the company that owned the source code wasn't really, you know, like, interested in developing it further.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And when you say Tom, who's Tom?
Tom is he's basically the founder. He
Mr. Blender.
Started developing. Yeah, he started developing Blender initially. He led the company that developed it, and then now he's leading development of Blender in open source.
So if, so if you have any questions about the code, you can always ask Tom.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's written like the most part of it.
Oh, that's actually very handy, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, there's a lot of obscure parts, and it's really handy to have him here, like near us, on at the Blender Institute, because often there's like parts that are
So
go
we,
ahead.
We recommended commercial. I didn't realize commercial, but we often recommended Blender, and that was Blender.nl at the time. On the screensavers on the TV show I did, and then it went away, and everybody we went, oh no. So it's really great that it's back and in active development. Do you want, maybe I should get Campbell to tell us what Blender does.
Okay, well, Blender, you could think of Blender as a general purpose 3D animation and modeling tool. People use it for a lot of different things, but it started out focusing just on animation for a small studio. But with Blender, you can do modeling, texturing, you can do fluid simulation. What else? What's all this stuff?
It's funny because we talked to the guys who did Pavre on the last episode, and neither of them were graphic artists. Are either of you are Blender, users, or are you mostly designers?
We both started out as users. Rich started out with Blender. When did what year?
2001, I think. But yeah, I didn't really use it a lot. I just learned how to use it, and then I stopped using it until it became open source, and I started contributing.
Ah, so that's a little different from the Pavre guys, isn't it, Randall?
Yeah, a little, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting to actually have people then that understand more about what you want to obtain, what you want to achieve as a visual look, and then having those people dig into the code, I presume.
Yeah, your fans first.
Yeah, I mean, I started using it once it became open source because I'm probably more of a open source zealot than some, so I was only really happy to use it once they made their first open source release, and I was confident that I was going to be putting time into something that wasn't just going to get bit rot and waste away on some server. And I started using it as a school project and then got a job as a contractor doing simulation work, and I did that for about 3 years and became a contributor during that time when I developed tools and sort of worked on things that were interesting to me.
Oh, that's neat. That's really
neat. Do you think Blender is used more for still images or more for movies or maybe somewhere in between? Do you have any sense of that?
Well, I think there's mostly still images being made because that's less work. Like, making animation takes a lot of work, and it's like animating. It's an extra skill you have to make an animation. So there's mostly images out there and fewer animations because they take months or years to complete.
And do you think people are trying more for a photorealistic look or more people doing abstract things or somewhere in between?
With Blender, I would say less photorealistic. And this also follows on to what you guys were talking about with Pavre. Blender isn't a ray tracer, so it isn't as good at simulating simulating really high quality photorealistic effects. But you can do some photorealistic stuff with Blender. It's just not as good as a ray tracer. So yeah, I would think it's less photorealistic.
So how does Blender do it compared to, say, ray tracing? Because we've got a good description of ray tracing in the last show. So can you tell me how Blender figures out how much lightness and darkness to put in a particular spot on the screen?
Well, it's not really so simple. But basically, the internal render engine, at least, uses scanline rendering, which is like OpenGL. You draw the polygons one by one onto the screen, basically. For lighting, I mean, we also have ray tracing in the render engine. So for things like reflections and lighting, shadows, you can also use ray tracing in addition to scanline rendering. So it's like it's a hybrid.
Wow. And unlike Pavre, which we talked about again last time, you actually have a GUI. You're actually interacting with some sort of GUI, dropping objects in front of you and moving them around and setting up cameras by using some sort of interaction. What's the process of that like? Is that a difficult process to learn? Is that something that anybody can pick up or what?
I think to start with, it isn't so hard. If you want to start with just some simple shapes and put them together and render them, it's not so hard to pick up. However, it isn't really like some people expect 3D software to be like a web browser or Microsoft Word or something. They really want an interface they know, and Blender is not that. So you will have trouble with the menus and just the whole interface. It's a bit like, you know, moving to Mac OS or Linux. There's just a different widget set. And some different paradigms with the user interface.
But what's great about Blender is the user community. I mean, there's so much material, so many places you can go to learn.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. There's a lot of wikis and a lot of... the user community is very active. I'm not so involved with it. I'm more involved with the developer community. Actually, neither of us are really heavily involved with the user community. we're both... enough to do with the developers, but yeah, it's pretty cool, and that's one of the things that draws a lot of people to Blender.
Yeah, we were just joking earlier on the IRC chat window there that there's a section on one of the wikis for Blender that says every material known to man.
You mean
except that it only had maybe 15 things on it. So I'm thinking either man isn't very smart or the wiki needs a little bit more work.
The wiki always needs.
Well, I do notice that you actually have there's actually a book being developed under Wikibooks, the Newbie to Pro book series or whatever, the Wikibook, and it actually has quite a bit of material in there already, because I was going through that to prepare for today's show, and I was sort of getting the hang of it from that, although it still seems...
It's challenging. It's tough. Don't undersell it. I mean, it's great. I mean, it's free, but it is. But I think it's true of any 3D tool. It's tough to get into. The advantage is that you're not spending thousands of dollars on a product like Studio 3D Max, but you're getting a product that is really amazing for nothing.
Yeah, so guys, how would you compare this to, say, the existing commercial tools or maybe other open source tools? How does it compare to things in the similar arena?
Compared to the commercial tools, of course, there's like a big range of commercial tools, but I mean, I think at the moment we're on par with some of the commercial tools, but compared to like the really big commercial tools like Maya, 3D Studio Max, I mean, there's still a lot we have to catch up. Compared to the other open source tools, I think Blender is far ahead of the other open source tools in terms of modeling, animation. There are other open source projects, but they're not being used as much. So in that area, there's not so much competition.
So you would use this for something like maybe a nice rendered art picture for maybe a website or a illustration for a magazine or something? Or is technical work being done with this, or is this just all for playing around?
a lot of different stuff's being done with it. There's it's used in like scientific imagery, sometimes medical imagery. I used it for simulation, like sort of virtual reality simulation type stuff. It's being used in many different areas that you wouldn't expect, though you, for the most part, it is used for sort of graphics and, like you say.
Now, when you said simulation, are you talking about physics simulation? Are you talking about actually bouncing things against each other in the using the actual
I used it to make content for an external simulator, so I'd export all the models to a 3D format.
Okay, all right. But that makes sense.
Yeah. Set up all the materials and that kind of stuff.
So you use it strictly as like a modeling tool, and then that gives you the, all your vertices and stuff that you can export to your other
project.
Very cool.
But now, I know scenes were kilometers by kilometers, so there was many, many different objects with different triggers and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Mm. And so this, but there is a physics engine in it. Is that, that's a fairly recent addition, right?
There's multiple physics engines in it, and they're all, well, relatively recent. There's like a fluid simulation engine, a soft body simulation engine, which is like for soft jelly-like objects. There's a rigid body simulation engine for more rigid objects. There's recently was a cloth simulation added.
And particles as well, like you can have hair and have physics applied to hair, which is really important to the project we're working on now. So, yeah.
And this makes sense mostly when you're doing animations, obviously. A physics for a still image would be crazy. Right.
Well, yeah, probably. You might want to set up moving objects and have motion blur on them and stuff, but you probably wouldn't in most cases.
Now, do these simulations look fairly realistic then? I mean, if I poured water out of a cup, it would sort of at least elicit some sense that I'm looking at the real thing?
Yeah, the fluid simulator is actually really quite advanced compared to other applications. People sometimes use Blender just for the fluid simulator. That's very good, although it is extremely slow to do good fluid simulation, but I don't know if there's a way around that.
So I could, for example, take like a can of oil and pour it out, and the slow viscosity of oil would be clearly different from, say, water or something.
Yep. Yeah, there's viscosity, gravity controls, all sorts of stickiness controls, things like that. Yeah.
How do you, I mean, you can't use somebody else's code. I mean, this is something that I guess probably every 3D rendering program keeps closely held. How do you do this kind of stuff? How do you learn how to do it? How do you make up the code to do something like that?
Well, it's just, there's a lot of research papers out there. There's, and a lot of these algorithms are also just, there's books about computer graphics and things like that. I mean, it's...
Is there a lot of trial and error involved as well, or?
Sure. I mean, there's, sometimes you have to try different approaches. Some things work better for users, and some things work better in theory or in research papers and things like that. So, yeah.
It's an interesting area. I guess it does make sense that there's a lot of academic research done there. There's the algorithms are not unknown.
Well, there's a lot of issues in computer graphics that don't really have good solutions, and there's very active research. And I mean, in computer graphics research, everyone is always trying to make things better quality, faster. Right. So there's a lot that can still be improved, even in the state of the art.
If somebody told me that fur is hard to do, what are your challenges right now? What are you working on?
Well, at the moment, we mostly like completed the development for the Peach of Movie project on which we were working, and one of the challenges there was fur, because fur is basically we have four furry characters, and they all have millions and millions of hairs.
That's a lot of calculations.
And,
yeah,
and it's a lot of fur.
Yeah,
and you have to be able to edit it. It has to animate along with the character, and you have to be able to render it efficiently.
Right.
So, that's one of the things we worked on.
Do you have voices in that? How do you synchronize like somebody's speech with the animation? Is there tools for that in Blender?
Not really. There's not, we're not really built-in tools for that. Luckily for this project, there's no no speech, so it wasn't a problem for us. But there are some other open source tools that you can use to synchronize things somewhat. But there's a lot of manual work involved because it's not only making, you know, the mouth shapes correctly, but it's also facial expressions and things like that. So it has to fit as a whole, not just, you know, have the mouth just be in the correct positions. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of manual work in synchronizing something like that.
Is Blender used in commercial projects and movies, things like that, or is it primarily used by amateurs having fun?
It's definitely used in commercial projects. We're seeing it used more and more for bigger projects, bigger commercial projects. Now there's a movie project going on at the moment called Plumiferos, which is a group in Argentina, a company in Argentina got together and they're making a movie in Blender.
Wow, that's neat.
Yeah, a full feature-length movie too.
Wow. So, wow.
That's quite a challenge.
And that's the first movie, I think it's the first 3D animated movie ever made in Argentina. Mm. So it's pretty cool.
And is it because they were predisposed towards open source, or were they cheap, or what?
I think these guys were into open source, yeah.
That's neat. I hear that about actually a lot of South America, that's a natural choice for political reasons as much as technical reasons.
Indeed. Yeah. Now, did either of you guys work on Elephant's Dream?
I worked on it a bit externally. I was already a Blender developer at the time, so I coded a few features that I used.
You're going to have to tell us what that is, Randall. What's Elephant's Dream?
Oh, we'll let them describe it.
All right.
It's basically the short movie project that was created with Blender, or entirely with open source software, so also other open source software. It was basically the first open source movie with all the creative assets were also released under a Creative Commons license, which meant that they could also be, you know, reused, much like you can reuse source code in open source projects.
And it was really quite remarkable. I remember watching it. It's only, what, about 4 minutes long, 5 minutes long, something like that. It's very short. But you have all these rich, deep visuals, including the two main characters that are working their way through this bizarre fantasy world. And I was really amazed, stunned by the quality of it. There's water in there. There's stuff flying up. There's just beautiful reflections and shadows of things. And so you're saying that all the models, all the materials and stuff that went into Elephant's Stream is up on some web server for me to download as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all on the Elephant's Dream website. There's a DVD you can download with all the files that were made, that were used to make the movie.
That's neat.
Wow. Is this the same thing you're doing with Peach as well? Are you going through that same open source everything kind of thing?
Peach is the second open movie, so in some way it's not as big a deal as the first, but there's
I like that open movie. Of course, that's what that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some people didn't like the other Elephant's Dream because it was because of the storyline. It wasn't so generally accepted or enjoyable. So this movie is like furry and funny. That's like the main aim. And people can enjoy it. Slapstick. It's kids can laugh at it. It's not trying to be too highbrow or. I don't know.
Yeah, Elephant's Dream was pretty deep. That's definitely true. It was bizarre.
How does an open source movie, is that like regular open source software? Is there a leader and a bunch of developers, or is it done by different people all over the world? I mean, how does something like that happen?
Well, we've got a studio set up to make the movie.
Oh, neat.
So there's like a small animation studio here. So it's not unusual for animation studios to have developers.
Where is here?
In Amsterdam, there's seven of us all together working on this short film.
That's so cool. Yeah. So you're not only developers, software developers, you're also, you're developers of content as well.
Yeah, well, Brett isn't. He's in the software development. They've roped me in to do a bit of animation and some special effects and stuff. But yeah, we both of us mostly just do software development, admin, keeping the systems going, fixing bugs and that kind of stuff. And it's the artists who they make the content. Mostly.
Campbell, you also worked with Google at the Summer of Code. That's kind of neat.
I think both of us did.
Did you both? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Did you come to Did you come to California to do that, or did you do that in Amsterdam?
No, I did that in Australia and
Australia,
Belgium.
Yep.
Now, as an animator on something like that, like the Peach Project, are you cognizant of like the limitations of Blender and specifically rewrite your art so it fits that, or do you go the other direction and go, I want this to look this way, and I got to find an engineer now to implement Blender to do that? What happens more often? Do you tug towards the technology or towards the art?
I think it happens both ways, but it starts off with the art. The artists say, we need these cool features, and then the developers have to go and write them and try and make them work. And then towards the end of the project, there's hard limits on, you know, certain technologies can't change or can't be rewritten. And then the artists are more limited, and they have to deal with those limitations.
It sounds to me like the kind of process that would happen in any real commercial studio anyway, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's so different, really.
Yeah.
Just the process of making the movie. They have got some externals helping, but... so far, they haven't. Oh, Ton hasn't decided to do a fully open movie, but that's a possibility where everything was open, like all the art assets were open. We had an SVN that, much like source code, other people had access to or submit patches. That's a possibility too, but we haven't got that far yet.
Wow!
Must be managed well, I think.
So, what's in the future for Blender? Do they just keep adding features until it becomes implodes on itself, or can do every material known to man, or something?
I think using it for more open projects is good. And that is what's planned. There is another open movie after this plan called Project Durian, which is to make a movie that 14-year-old boys would love, kind of like The Matrix or something, monsters, and no storyline, just explosions and effects and things like that. So that's going to push Blender in a new direction too.
It's actually a kind of a neat way to... develop open source software is to for this to the same kind of group that's developing it to also use it, and get that feedback loop going between the development of it and the use of it. Eating your own dog food, I guess they call it in the commercial.
Yeah, it's extremely important to do that. It would just be so much worse, or there would be so many features missing. Or I mean, if you try and do something complex as making a short film, there is just a huge amount of little features and glitches and all these things that need to be ironed out, so it is very important.
But on the other hand, developing it specifically for things like an open movie also shifts attention to certain things that, like, there's also parts of Blender that don't get as much attention, like the user interface, which is important for new users, but for experienced users, it might be. I mean, it's
that explains it. Now I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is a big project going on at the moment to do a lot of user interface refactoring and improvement, which is going to be Blender 2.5. So there is attention for that as well. But of course, we have to be careful not to only implement features for advanced users, but also try to maintain a balance to keep it also easy to use.
That's something open source gets hit for a lot. I mean, I think if you look at the GIMP is a similar situation. And it makes sense, I guess, because user interface design is really a kind of a whole different branch of development. And I think a lot of engineers, you tell me this, Rand, but I think a lot of programmers think, I can do UI, no problem.
Oh, yeah. The problem is most programmers actually don't understand a lot about UI, and they know how to write the guts, and they don't know how to write the interface or the manual.
Or I'd even be more charitable. They know how the program works, and they make a UI that makes sense to them given how the program works. But that may not be the best way to do a UI from the
That's
point
very
of view
true.
Of a user.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of curious about your development process. Is this done in C or C++, or what's the primary coding in Blender?
Most of it is in C. There's a few C++ modules, and there's also some Python scripts extensions, but it's mostly C.
Now, do you have do you do testing? Is this test driven development? Do you just kind of throw it together and hope it works?
We don't have unit testing frameworks, and that would be nice. That's something we're hoping to have much more automated in 2.5, but. Yeah, so we throw it together. Well, we throw it together and hope it works, but there are very, very complex files that and many users who will tell us that it doesn't work if it doesn't. So
yeah, you have that advantage.
Within 12 hours, you'll have someone complaining that the latest SVN broke.
Who takes? I'm curious, in an open source project, who takes the lead on something like that? Who makes that decision? Is there a committee meeting? I mean, who says, you know, we've got to work on this, or this is the priority for the next version?
Well, Ton does. Ton is he's a bit like Python. He's the benevolent dictator.
He's like Guido. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Larry, or any number of, or Linus, yeah, any number of first name people.
Yes, yeah. Right.
But he doesn't really, I mean, people work on what they want to work on, so he has to kind of decide what goes into a release or when we're going to release, mm-hmm. and what can be added and can't be added, but people tend to work on what they find interesting.
That makes sense, yeah. I mean, it's a democracy with a benevolent dictator, and you have to keep both sides happy.
Do you ever have the desire to break backward compatibility and then have to go through the discussion about whether that's useful or not?
Yeah, fair bit. Yeah, I guess so. But usually there's releases where that can be done. And it's not so bad. Like, you can do a fair bit of stuff without breaking backward compatibility too. So
just keep adding features instead, right? Let's see, there's about 17 ways to do mirror reflection now.
yeah, it does get difficult.
Yeah, that must be a challenge, too. You can't ever take a feature out, can you?
Well, it depends on what kind of feature it is. Like, if it's a tool, then you can take it out, because it's not, I mean, you can still open your files or whatever.
Right.
But in practice, I don't think it's really been an issue too much, like, we wanted to take a feature out or not. I haven't really seen a lot of times where it was actually an issue.
Right. It is a problem in commercial software. It's a big problem. That's why you get these big bloated programs, of course.
How does the speed of using Blender change as you become more familiar with it? I mean, I'm sitting here struggling just to get like 3 or 4 objects kind of looking sane in my window. Is it a whole different experience to watch someone use this who's already really familiar with the interface?
Yes, big, big difference. You get extremely used to all the keys. Your muscle memory remembers all the different key shortcuts, and it's,
It's and you probably really have like a giant monitor in front of you and 2 monitors on each side and 3 mouses.
Not yet. Con is interested in multi-mouse technology, but we haven't got there yet.
Yes.
Let's not go too crazy here. You should post videos of that, though. I mean, I think it'd be interesting for people who are starting out to watch. I know it's true with Photoshop that beginners often look with awe at a Photoshop master at how fast they do stuff. And it's kind of inspiring, and also gives you the idea that you can get there too. It is possible to become proficient with this.
Yeah, that's it. You should just set up just a webcam, like set up with Ustream, Stickum or something. just point a camera at somebody that's working there at your offices, and let's watch. That would be really cool, I think.
It's always wonderful to watch somebody's virtuoso at anything.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Well, there's one of the people working here, Andy. Is extremely good, and even the people who, all the other artists who have been using Blender for years, he's absolutely incredible to see him make the models. And he made all the models for the movie, the 4 characters. He made them in, was it under a week?
Wow.
Very fast.
Yeah, we need an Andy cam then. Set that up.
If you want to look, I think you could YouTube for Blender 3D time lapse. You probably find. There is definitely time-lapse videos of people modeling stuff.
Oh, good. I'd like to see that. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. It would make you feel inadequate, Randall, but only briefly. Only briefly.
I started this conversation feeling inadequate, so I don't think it's much lower I can go.
I just throw my hands up and say, I'm sure there's somebody else who can do this for me, because I'm never going to be able to figure this out.
Look, if I get my name in red glowing letters, I'm done.
Yeah, there you go.
That's all I'm aiming for.
Blender is free and has a very large and active community, as we mentioned. You can go to blender.org to get Blender. But while you're there, you'll see all sorts of documentation, resources, and tutorials. And I mean, there's no reason really to feel like, you're all alone in this. Now, what's peach.blender.org? Is that where that's where the Peach movie is. So that's another place to see people work. In fact, there's a video here I see of people working on Peach. That's neat.
So if you there's a series of YouTube videos by the is the guy 12? Who is that? there's a guy. He's like he's done like 20 of these videos.
Very good. Very good.
He is. Does anybody know how old he is? Because he sounds it was something three something. I forget his actual name, but he's done a bunch of videos around YouTube for tutorials, and he's very good. It's incredibly good, but he sounds like he's 12, and now he's going to be mad. And he's going to email me and really hate me. But no, great videos though. So yeah, check those out too.
There's a lot on YouTube. I'm looking. I'm seeing a lot of Blender stuff. That's neat.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, cool. Okay.
Well, guys, we want to thank you for taking some time to talk about us. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the future of Blender? Anything you want to point people towards? Anything exciting?
Well,
2.5's coming.
2.5 will have a new interface. So if you're one of the people that has not used Blender because of its interface, it's probably worth checking out that. And also that the Noob to Pro wiki book is very good. I've worked through that with people, and I found that a good resource too. Just starting out.
And now you're doing a game. You've got Peach, which is the movie. Now you're going to do an open game called Apricot.
Yes, game project starting up.
That's really a neat idea. So you're looking for people to work on that kind of stuff too?
We've got the team already together.
Okay.
For the features and for developers, we're always looking for more developers, of course. So yeah.
Great. Great.
Cool.
Brecht von Lommel and Campbell Barton, we want to thank you so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank
you so much for keeping Blender alive. I have to say, it was very sad when Blender.nl went down. I thought, we've lost a really wonderful resource. And I was so happy when Blender.org came up.
Yeah.
And then we could tell people, hey, you can still get Blender.
Could still blend.
Still blend. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate your time. I know it's probably fairly late there, so we thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
Take care. Yeah.
Back to work.
All right. So, yeah, back to work. That's nice. back to work. So it's probably let's see, we're doing this at 5 o'clock our time. If they're in Amsterdam, it's about 2 a.m. or something.
Almost certainly, yeah. These guys stayed up really late to have this call with us. So that's really, really appreciate nice it for us. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although if I know programmers, they probably were up anyway.
Now that's sort of what I said. And when I exchanging email with them, I said, you know, I'm sure you're going to be up anyway, but it was great. And I'm glad they got a chance to chat with us, and I'm glad they had a bunch of perspective on, I had no idea they were both artists and programmers. So it was just
that
really
is unusual.
Good.
They're very different from the Pavre guys that we talked to last time.
Absolutely. I mean, it was cool too that, you know, they're busy working at it. And I like the fact they're building, the Peach and Apricot to really demonstrate the technology. And
is that pretty typical, do you think? I mean, when Larry Wall's working on Perl, does he make, I guess a lot of Perl's written in Perl. So I guess in that sense, they are eating their own dog food.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I think you do need things like Elephant's Dream and Peach and Apricot and things like that to really show off the technology by the people who have it that are creating the technology. So that, because I have to say, until Elephant's Dream came along and I got to see this really wonderful short movie, I'd only seen like little teeny bits of animations. And it wasn't until I saw the whole thing put together, I went, this is really possible now, with a dozen guys working for a dozen months or come up with something really cool like this. You need those sorts of demo things. It's what happens in any technology where you're trying to sell it. Even in open source, there's still a bit of selling involved because you've got to have, bring people on board, and you got to have it worth it. Yeah.
Well, so. I have to also say, if I'm a developer working on plugins or, any kind of features for a 3D rendering program, I'm going to be much more interested in a program that's open source, that's got a vital community around it, that looks like it's an ongoing project, and that I'm not going to be tied into somebody's commercial goals and dreams. You know, you develop for Photoshop, you have to hope, or 3D Studio Max, or Maya, you have to hope that they're going to continue to develop it, that they're going to continue down the same roads, and they're not going to make a change to the program that puts you out of business. Whereas you become a part of an open source community, it's a whole different story.
And I got to say, 3D companies come and go. I mean, I remember early on the Mac, I was really got into Ray Dream Designer. I was doing a lot of cool things with it, and it was a nice interface and stuff, and gone. I think Carrera bought them out, and then somebody bought Carrera out, and now it's like nothing going on in that arena. And I have some files that are sitting here that, my only version of Ray Dream ran under, under 68K, so obviously I'm not running it now, am I?
It must-
so it's I got a bunch of dead files that I can't do anything with. So there it is. It's old stuff.
It must be very gratifying to Ton Rosendahl, who's the founder of, who created Blender, to be able to take it open source. And, you know, I look at so many projects. You know, right now they're talking about trying to bring back BOS. And there's, there's of course, a project to kind of emulate it. But they never did get the source code. And I look at projects like that that go under. And I wish that there would just be kind of this automatic release to open source.
Well, we got the same thing with all the old video games, you know,
same
all the companies
thing.
That went out of business. Here's these great games that nobody can ever play anymore. And that's really the, you know, since this podcast is about open source, I really want to, you know, pimp this a bit, is that it's really nice that we're getting this wealth of intellectual property out there in the public so people can build on it, can understand how it works, can add to it, develop it, and translate it. You know, we talked with Fernando Wyden about that, about translations and things, and just it's really nice that we're sort of really finally coming full circle with technology here, and I wish more things were done this way. And it sounds like, you know, day by day we're getting more and more interesting projects like Blender that are letting us you know, build on each other's work.
Because we're really very lucky they had the $100,000 to buy the rights to it. But I would just encourage companies that are going out of business. You know, I mean, Jean-Louis Gasset, I wish he had open sourced BOS. Probably there are lots of reasons why it's encumbered and they can't. But I think that's a way to keep something alive and keep all that work that's been done by these talented people from just being wasted, just being thrown out.
That would be interesting to wonder if a board of directors would accept what would be the inverse of a golden parachute, an anti-gold parachute.
A lead parachute. Not a good image.
where if a company should fail to, you know, find a seller or whatever. So, but I guess actually there's always a buyer. I mean, the bank buys it.
Yeah, and, you know, and oftentimes they use proprietary code from other sources that they license, and they can't give that away. And that might be core to it. I understand the issues involved, but I'm just thrilled that Blender has survived and is now available on Windows, on Linux, on Mac, on Solaris, on FreeBSD, on Irix. I mean, it's really
Irix that still exists.
Yeah, well, apparently, because they're developing for it. It's
the old SDI machines.
Right. Well, and of course, they were used for a lot of 3D rendering, so it makes sense.
Absolutely. And I know that this thing gets some assistance from the OpenGL stuff. So you're actually, as you're drawing and moving things around, it's using all the modern graphics chips to actually put the stuff up on the screen really fast, which is really cool too. So if you have a high-end graphics machine, you know, working with Blender is actually a real dream, a real nice interaction. Sure. So
you know what else is a mind blower? I mean, Blender itself is 8, 9, 10, 11 megabytes. It's not a very big program. It's a quick download, and it's amazing what it can do. Go to the gallery, the features and gallery page, and you can see what people are doing with Blender, blender.org. And and I want to thank you so much for, this is practically Floss Weekly again. Thanks to you, Randall Schwartz.
I'm sorry I pulled off two of them right in a row again. I tell you, it's
going to be amazing. You're amazing. Well, we'll spread it out a little bit, but when's your next cruise? How soon are you going back to?
This weekend. This weekend.
Oh, so he's going back to sea again, so
I've got some cold weather up here in Portland right now, and I'm going to be so anxious. We're heading back out. This is a Photoshop cruise. We got Deke McClellan and his group on it.
Oh, Deke's
great. It's going to be great. Good stuff. And a retread, actually, of the cruise I did 4 weeks ago. Exactly the same route, exactly the same ship, same staff people. So I'm going to get on the ship, and the bartender will already have my drink ready. It's all going to be great.
What a life you lead. He's an old salt, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
Randall Schwartz. Thank you so much, Randall. We'll talk again soon, I hope, on Floss Weekly.
Yeah.